welcome to the Chelsea Skidmore Show. I am here today with writer-producer Michael Jammin. Jammin?
That's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'm laughing because right before I came here, my husband was like, oh, you have to like do some weird intro where you're like pretending to be an old radio host. And it's like, okay, and we are here on 94.3 and we are jamming with Michael Jammin.
Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah. And then everyone tunes out.
I know. And then I was like, no, I'll never do that. And then I just did it.
You did it. And it came out great.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for coming. You have written and produced on a number of great shows.
Yeah.
Maren,
yeah.
King of the Hill.
Yes.
Just Shoot Me.
Yes. What else?
I'm
asking for myself, really.
Fuck. I had this in my head.
You want me to tell you?
Yeah, let's tell us.
Well, you got all those. There's Beavis and Butthead, Rules of Engagement, Out of Practice, Wilfred, Brickleberry, and currently writing and producing Tacoma FD,
mm-hmm.
a bunch of pilots, a couple of movies no one ever heard of.
So, but you mainly work in the television space.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you just start writing features, or is that something you always did?
No, but we just, you know, that was something we did. I think we were writing, my writing partner, we did it more on King of the Hill. Like, hey, let's see if we can sell some movies. Let's see what that's like. And it's not good.
But now you're coming back around to it.
Oh, no. I'm very happy working in TV.
Mm-hmm.
TV's, you know, you get more creative control. You get more money. I don't know why people want to write movies, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially because, is it true that just TV is more popular today anyways?
Yeah, and I think that's where the really good writing is, I think, is in TV. And movies don't get made. And when they do get made, they get rewritten by a billion different people. And then I guess it has that cachet, but I don't know. It seems like TV's cooler to me.
Yeah, and you kind of lose control
all
these other people get involved.
The director's in charge in film and in TV. The writer's in charge.
Yeah. Yeah. And then with your writing partner, is that for everything that you do?
We've been writing together, yeah, for, I don't know, almost 30 years. And I only have one other project alone on the side. That's just my book I'm writing.
And how do you feel working on that alone without him?
That was, yeah, it was a little intimidating at first. I was like,
can I do this?
Can I do this? And also, I'd never written a book before. Can I do that? And to be honest, it's so creatively freeing. I mean, I'm loving it. So, yeah. And so when I put out a show on, I say a one-man show based on that, and then we're starting touring with it.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. So what's the book about?
The book is called The Paper Orchestra, and it's a collection of personal essays. So I've always been a huge fan of David Sedaris, mm-hmm. If you know his work. So this is my version of what he does and what a million other people do. But so it's just little stories that are true stories, and as if I'm the main character in it. So they're dramatized. It's not like by the time I, you know, skinned my knee, or like, you mm-hmm. know, I'm not the president of the United States. I haven't done anything noteworthy. So they're just little small stories. And how do I dramatize that?
I'm sure you've done something noteworthy.
I didn't land on the moon or anything. I mean, I'm a TV writer. Like, I don't know. No one's ever heard of me. So, you know, I'm just a guy who writes.
I know who you are.
Yeah, because I got on TikTok.
I know. That's so funny. I was telling Michael right before this started that my husband is the one who introduced me yeah. to who Michael was, because you do have a great following on TikTok yeah. and Instagram. And I feel like I don't know any other writer who has a following like you or puts out the type of content that you yeah. do.
There's a couple, but I was very, you know, I was very insecure about doing it in the beginning, because like, why am I talking? What's the point of all this? And I was doing it to build an audience so I could sell, you know, so I could basically do what I want to do.
So was this something someone suggested you did?
Yeah.
You should have more of a social media presence?
It was my agent, my book agent. And so when I put together this collection, you know, he said, in order to sell a collection of personal essays, like, who the hell am I? So in order to sell that, the word is platform drives acquisition. I was like, well, what does that mean? So platform means your social media platform. Mm-hmm. That's how old I was. I don't know what that meant.
I didn't know what it meant. Platform drives acquisition. Yeah, I was hoping you would tell me.
You have to have a big following.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him, give me a year. I go, don't worry. Don't move. Don't go anywhere. Give me a year.
That's good that you were able to take that direction and be open to it too.
That's years of working TV have taught me that.
Mm.
So when you sell a project or you don't sell a project, it's like it's dead. You know, if you sell three places here, you go, okay, it's dead everywhere, because you just get that same note over. And so when you run up against that wall over and over again, you go, okay, this is groupthink. And so you have to accept that. I understand there's a certain amount of groupthink going on. Now you have to think like them in order to succeed.
What was the process like for you with, like, how did you know where you were going to start? Did he suggest, okay, talk about screenwriting? Because the content that you're putting out there is different from the content that's in your book and what your one-man show would be.
That you got to see now. You're already making me insecure and anxiety. You're giving me anxiety.
But you're
exactly right, because I was like, I'm talking about screenwriting, and then at some point I have to position myself into this, not a teacher, but a person, like a personality. And so when I do all these posts, I'm trying to inflect personality. I give you like a glimpse into my life. And sometimes these posts aren't educational at all. They're more just like, okay, here's a funny, you know, 30-second bit I wrote or whatever.
Something you do very well is engage with your audience. A lot of ask me any question and all.
I need it. Give me the questions
because
I run out of things to say.
Yeah. Tony. We can crack the door. Are you sweating? I'm sweating.
It's a little warm.
It's warm. It's always so fucking hot in here.
Can
we crack the door? It is hot. I felt him over there. So how did you have to kind of get over yourself in the process of doing that? Because you said you weren't a performer before.
I had to get over myself. And at first I was like, I didn't know anything about TikTok. I'm like, I'm not a 15-year-old girl. Why am I in this platform? And it turns out there are other people my age and I follow other people who are interesting. There are people my age who are just posting interesting content, you know, like you can learn. There's a lot you can learn. You don't just have to watch 15-year-old shuffle dance. You don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But you can if you want. So I was very like, why am I doing this? What is this for?
And the audio is very good. Because my husband sent me a video that I listened to while I was at the gym, and it was so loud, like in a good way, that I was like, he's mic'd up.
It's an iPhone.
It's
an iPhone.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Because I was like, is this on speaker? Like I was checking my headphones when I listened to it.
I'm glad. No, I have a newish iPhone, so maybe that's it.
So with the one-man show, when do you start taking that on tour?
We did six shows in August.
Oh, how was it?
Again, I was like, am I going to be able to sell shows? You know, I just went on social media and then I sold them all out.
Where was that?
That was at the Atwater Playhouse.
Great.
And then we're doing two more in Boston in November, then another, or two or three more. Then two more in back at the Atwater Playhouse in LA. And then we're looking into Houston. We're going to tour.
Mm-hmm. So, you should do Austin.
I mean, yeah, it's really about where I think I can sell out. You know, tickets. But it's fun.
I was just thinking of a creative city besides Houston.
Yeah. Well, you have to get people to show up, but yeah.
Right. So is it an hour long?
It's about an hour and followed by like a 15 to 20 minute Q&A. So
mm-hmm.
Just talk about the work. And I have a lot of, just people who follow me show up. And there are a lot of them are aspiring writers and they just want to talk about the process. And I love that.
So do you include any of that in the one man? No.
No, I mean, include what?
Speaking about the process.
Only in the Q&A afterwards.
Got it. Okay.
If there's a question, yeah.
That's, a little incentive for the writers.
Yeah, to show up.
Yeah.
I'm always thinking, what more can I give you? You know?
Do you feel like a lot of the questions you get, what's like the most popular questions that you consistently get that you can give us on the...
There was one in particular, and I wasn't even prepared for it. So the pieces are, they're all true. And so the first one I do two, and the first one's light, and the second one, it always starts out, because I'm a comedy writer, so it's funny, and then we get heavy. We get into something real, because once you get your guard down, that's when I start punching you.
Smart.
Yeah. And so it gets very vulnerable, and you can hear a needle drop. At some point, people are not laughing anymore, and you could just hear that we're all sharing the same thing, and it's wonderful. And so people are asking me, at the end, it's not a dry eye in the house, which is perfect. And there are people saying, well, how do you, the question I heard over and over again, is it hard for you to be so vulnerable here in front of everybody? And it really is, there's a couple answers to this. First of all, that's your job. If you're going to be a writer, that's your job, is to be vulnerable. That's what you're signing up for. But secondly, and I think they're asking me this because they thought, was I worried about being judged? Because I'm saying personal things and it's not flattering, you know, but it's entertaining. And I was more worried about being judged as a bad writer. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wouldn't want to go up there and leave people bored or, like, you know, wanting to leave or unentertained. And so that's my judgment. I don't want to be judged that way. So in order to prevent that from happening, I have to share more of myself. I have to just be intimate and be giving and be vulnerable. And it's ironic because by allowing yourself to be judged, you will not be judged.
Mm.
That's the paradox of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're worried about being judged, then allow yourself to be judged and you won't be judged.
Yeah, I love that. Did you watch Three Mics, Neil Brennan's special?
No. Where's
that
playing?
You should watch it. Netflix.
I will.
Yeah. He does a really, it's super vulnerable and it's, he does like personal stories, jokes, and one-liners, mm-hmm. and he moves between three different mics and it was just...
Oh, how interesting.
Okay. It was, and it worked really well and... It just like a lot of like really heavy, vulnerable wow. stories, but it fit really beautifully and it was really special. And I think it'd be interesting for you to watch,
I'll watch it
for
tonight.
Sure. Yeah. So that's so cool. Awesome. I love it. So I want to hear about your background and just growing up, where you went to school, your how it led up to your career in writing.
Well, we're from very close to each other in New York, same suburb in Westchester. And then when I was in high school, I used to watch, you know, I love watching TV, so sitcoms. And then Cheers was like the big show. And I remember thinking if I could, you know, write on Cheers, that would be amazing. So after college, I moved out to California.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to school in Princeton.
Okay.
So after college, fact check that. That could be a lie. After college, I moved out to LA and it took many years to break in as a sitcom writer. But I eventually wound up getting a job. Well, one of the shows I wrote for was called Out of Practice, and that was shot on the same soundstage that Cheers was shot on. And so I was like, I made it, but I'm just 10 years too late.
yeah. So how many years did it take you to get that first job?
Not long.
And what was that process like?
Well, it felt like forever. I mean, I was out here for about 4 years before I got a full-time job on Just Shoot Me as a staff writer. But that's not a long time, but that 4 years feels like 40 because you just don't know how long it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
And in that time, I was working as, you know, a PA, production assistant, or assistant to executive producers. I mean, I managed to get those kind of jobs, and you learn so much just from working under people who are doing the job you have.
Mm-hmm.
You want.
So then do you feel like once you got that first job, you were in the system?
Yeah, but you can be thrown out at any minute. I mean, you know, I remember I was on Just Shoot Me as a staff writer. I remember thinking, well, the airport, like flying back to New York for like Christmas or something, and thinking everyone in the airport wants my job. But but you're on. That's how I'm like top of the world. I felt because I had finally gotten what I always wanted. Which was,
that's I love that though.
Yeah.
That's
but no
cute.
One, no one. No one wants my job. But feeling, you know, yeah.
So you were on Just Shoot Me, and then from there, is it you were able to get an agent from there? Oh, and then when you got hired on that first job, were the rules the same then? Like, did you, because I think back then, didn't you have to write a spec for the show? But today, that's not necessary.
No, you I didn't
you should write, have like two samples or something.
It's the same thing. I mean, you wouldn't write a spec for the show you're trying to get on. That's yeah. But we had, my partner and I had, I don't know, easily 10 specs, you know, so we had scripts from all sorts of different shows. We didn't have an original pilot. That's the new thing now, which I think is terrible. But
oh, really? Why is that?
Because it's much easier to write a sample script of an existing show. You can watch a show, study the characters, feel like, okay, this is how they talk. This is what their stories are like. But to create a show from whole cloth, like that's a skill set. It's a whole different skill set.
I feel good then.
I mean, it's so much harder. And new writers are expected to do that. Because there's no, back then, everyone, there was like a handful of shows everyone knew. But now there's so many shows and each of them only have like 10 people watching them. So you have to write your own original material. And I think it's unfair, but that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. So from Just Shoot Me, did you steadily continue working like one of the lucky ones?
Yeah, we've worked nonstop every year since.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So what do you think it is about the way that you show up to work that's, afforded that?
Well, in the beginning, it was a little easier back then. There were more shows, more comedies, and those comedies stayed on the air longer. So you'd have 22 episodes a year. You get paid per episode produced. Most writers do. And so you do 22 episodes of Just Shoot Me or King of the Hill or whatever. You take King of the Hill's different because it's animation, but you take a short hiatus and go back to work the next season. But here, now, a show might do 10 or 13 episodes a season. That's not enough to get by.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to hustle and sell a pilot on the side or do whatever to constantly hustle. So it's a little harder in that. I think it's easier to break in now, but harder to sustain a little.
Mm-hmm. Do you still feel like you're in the position where you have to like hustle on the side?
Oh, well, my hustling on the side is like selling a pilot.
Right.
Yeah.
So how do you budget your time when you're working on a project and you're working on your next solo thing?
I think everyone expects it now that you're always, but mm-hmm. when I'm on staff of a show, I'm full-time on that show. And, you know, if I have to do something, I'll do it on the weekends or at night. I don't want to inconvenience whoever's hired me. That's not right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So, yeah, just like outside hours.
Yeah.
Do you write every single day?
Yes. Yeah, to some degree, yeah.
What's your process like? And what are the rituals or tips or tricks that you have for yourself that's like, that you've set in place that's worked for you that you don't stray from to keep you going?
Well, I think we have a writing partner, so we hold each other accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. So, like, you know, I just came from his place. We're working on something.
Do you mainly work together in person?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Except for the pandemic at the beginning. But yeah, I mean, we live close to each other, so it's easier that way. You just talk about stuff. But I'm most creative in the morning. I think mm-hmm. he is too. So that helps me on the same schedule. But then before that, I'm always working on, you know, my stories on the side, my book, you know, my collection of essays. So that's like, you know, I'm always thinking about that.
Mm-hmm. Did you have specific goals for yourself when you're working on that in terms of like the amount of pages you want to write a day or?
Everyone says that. I mean, putting out 5 or 10 pages of garbage doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point? But for me, so I have 21 stories in this book. And every time I finish a story, I felt like, well, that's it. There's none left. You know, I really feel that way. And so the fact that I have this many is kind of amazing to me. But I keep a list of ideas in my phone. And mm-hmm. Every time something comes to me, I just jot it down. So people don't realize that you don't – like writing, you can make time for writing. If you're in your car and something comes to you, make a note. And then later you get home, you have an hour. You can type it up. But you don't have to sit at your desk all day and write.
Mm-hmm.
You can have these moments that come to you and just keep notes. And that's fine.
Yeah. Something interesting. So what you just said. So about like, oh, I don't have any more ideas.
Yeah.
So I want to be a show creator. Mm-hmm. So I'm writing a lot of original pilots. And a lot of those are taken from different time frames in my life.
Perfect.
And it's essentially me every time in different parts and experiences and things I've been through.
Good.
And then there's like a part of me that's like, okay, like I feel like I hit everything. Where do I go from here?
Well, I mean, how much have you written? I mean, are you talking about you have multiple shows? Is that what you're talking about? Or?
Like 4 pilots, okay. Say. Yeah. And then I'm like, and I'm working on another. And then I'm like, okay, so those all are like at different stages of my life.
But if
essentially.
One of those shows went, you'd need to have every season 13 episodes, 13 different ideas for that one, right?
Yeah.
So you would have to come up with more. I mean.
No, I know. Not that. Well, that's like for that. For I'm talking about like for separate like show ideas. Like,
okay.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I'm trying because I'm like, I don't know where to come up with something. So I'm going to just take different.
But you'll continue living. I mean, you just had a baby.
There it is.
And so.
That is such an obvious answer.
Right?
Yeah. You'll continue living.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
Hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. So talk to me about building characters then. And this is for if you're working on an original project.
Building characters. Well, the best thing to do, I think, is just steal like from people you know and, you know, model characters after them. That's the easiest thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, we have a whole process document that we use to create characters so that when you look at them as a whole, you have 5 or 6 characters in a show, you have enough of so they can interact in interesting ways. So, for example, if one character is very liberal and the other one's it doesn't help to have 2 liberal characters.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have 1 and conservative, 1 liberal. That way they can fight.
Yeah, you want to constantly create conflict.
Yeah, so that you want to think of all your characters like that.
Mm-hmm. And do you think about archetypes?
I don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of lame.
Well, it's like Joseph Campbell. I just don't think of it. Like the hero's journey and all that you're talking about.
Well, I just feel like it's. You know, if you're starting to learn how to write and you pick up like 8 characters of comedy and you're like, oh, I feel like I have to hit every one of these to have a great sitcom.
I don't know. I mean,
I don't write stuff like that, but right. I feel like that's crossed my mind before. I'm like, when I'm stumped, I'm like, am I supposed to be? No.
Yeah, I don't, I've never.
Because it'd be based on the world, right? Anyways.
Yeah, you create your characters. Archetype, no. We just think about how these characters can interact with each other.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that's like the main thing that drives kind of where you're going.
Yeah, yeah.
So would you say that you like to write things that are more character-based?
Yeah, like I'm always, small character stories are so much more interesting to me than superheroes fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
what is a small character story? Like, what's an example of what that
example
means?
Would be, I just watched one recently, one with Reese Witherspoon, where she's hiking in the, what was it called?
Wild.
Yeah.
Okay, that's, I didn't see it.
Oh, it was lovely, and it's based on a book by Cheryl Strayed. Mm-hmm. And so it's about a woman who, her mom dies, and she just goes on a hike. In the Apple, not the Appalachian, the Oregon Coast Trail, or one of these trails, and that's it. She just goes on a long walk. That's it.
Simple idea.
It's so small,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's just about her coming to terms with her mother's death.
Mm.
That's it. And it was fascinating, you know. And go watch that. I'll watch Neil Brennan's show, and you'll watch the other one.
Okay.
Tonight.
Yeah.
Get back to each other.
What are you watching right now? What do you love? Did you love The Dropout?
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
Really?
No.
So funny.
There's a lot I have to catch up on. I watched Somebody Somewhere on HBO, and I just thought, again, that's another small story. I thought the pilot,
is that Bridget Everett?
Yeah. I thought the pilot was so beautifully written and messy, but in a good way. I think that they did just a lovely job on
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah, I love the tone.
Yeah.
Anything else?
That's it.
Are you careful about what you say?
I try to be.
About what you watch and like?
About what am I watching? Oh, I watched, you know, the pilot of, House of the Dragons, right? House of the Dragon. Game of Thrones. I watched that.
Oh, okay.
But mostly I'm reading a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I just finished David Sedaris' new book. You know, I don't know, because that's kind of what I'm wanting to do is writing on the side, so.
Where do you find your inspiration?
You know what? I think that's bullshit.
Uh-huh. Well, the way that I thought is because, for example, like if I'm listening to a song, I'll be like, oh, this is like such a scene, you know, and then it starts to paint that picture in your head. And then from there, I'm like building something.
That's legit.
Yeah.
I just think some people think, well, I'm waiting for inspiration to strike. And that
no.
and it doesn't.
I just meant like, does reading books like inspire an idea for you?
Yeah.
Listening to music, driving in the car. Like, right. Where are you?
I'll think of what's my version of that story.
Yeah. I didn't mean it in like such a lofty way.
No. I get this question a lot, like on social media,
mm-hmm.
where I think some people think, you know, what do I'm blocked. Inspiration is not coming to me. It's like, well, you got to go get it.
Mm-hmm. You know? So what do you do?
You sit down at the computer.
Yeah.
Sit down and start writing until something, you know, I might come up with 5 pages of garbage until I find something good.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
So then do you believe in doing like the vomit draft and just getting it out?
That's not how it works in TV. In TV, it's very collaborative. So you have a writer's room, you know, and you break a story on the wall and everyone's on board at the same time. Everyone can follow it so we can pitch and make it better. But for this book that I did, I didn't want to write it that way. I wanted to just start writing and see. I wanted it to be a little more organic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but it's much more inefficient writing that way. So I would write like 30 pages and have to toss the 20 out before I found the story.
Mm.
But I just like the process was more interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause you're so used to things being much tighter.
Yeah. And knowing what the story is before I start writing. This one I'm just writing, hoping I find a story. And sometimes I never did. And then I just throw it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so do you actually throw things out or do you save it in a drawer like your Woody Allen?
It's on files, but I never look at it again.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Do you have like a ton of hard drives like constantly backing up tons of shit that you never use and you're like, what the fuck am I doing with this?
Everywhere, but it doesn't take any space.
Right.
You know, it's not like a video.
That's true. So you and your, how many days a week do you and your partner meet?
5 days a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Monday through Friday. What are the hours?
Half days. Unless we're working on something.
That's
so
nice.
Because we're more creative in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
When I say half days, we're working till 2 or whatever, 3 sometimes. But if we're turning something in, then we'll work longer hours.
So when do you write something and then edit it? Like, do you work on what you need to do that day? Like, specifically, are you going to be writing something through and then editing it in that moment? Or are you going to sit on that?
It just depends. Like today we're working on a pilot idea that we're going to take out. So there's just a lot of, you know, trying to figure out what the show is. But when we're on turning in a draft, we literally, one of us sits at the computer and the other one watches on the monitor. And then we're literally writing it, you know, as we go.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like one of you guys is better at story versus jokes?
You know what?
That's or is a good combo?
In the beginning, my partner Sievert was much better at story, and I was the joke guy. And when you go into a writer's room, like the joke guy's the hero because you pitch the joke and everyone laughs. Mm-hmm. Whose joke was that? But the story person is way more valuable. Mm-hmm. So over time, I've learned now I'm much more 50-50. Like I, you know, story is super important. I really understand that. So.
Mm-hmm. And then do you feel like the best way to get good at that is just reading a lot of pilots and watching a lot of TV, or is it more instinctual?
No, it's not instinctual at all. No, you have to learn it. And mm-hmm. I've learned it from other writers before me. It's not, it's like a mystery. As a matter of fact, when I was a young writer on Just Shoot Me, when they were breaking on the stories on the board, I'm like, how do they know? And I'd pitch something and it wouldn't get any traction. Then someone else would pitch something and people would love it. And I'm like, how do they know?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's obvious to me, but back then it was a mystery.
Okay. Well, can you make it obvious to me and the listeners?
That's a long, you know, you really have to, there are certain moments that you have to know how to construct, like act break moments, and you have to know whether an idea has enough meat on the bone to turn it into an episode of television. Mm-hmm. And you really have to have a clear understanding of what your character wants at all times and what the story, I always say there's, for every story I write, I ask myself two questions. What's the story about? And then I say, what is the story really about? And you need both. What's the story really about? So if the story is about, you know, two friends opening up a pizza store or whatever, okay, what's it really about? Well, maybe it's that might be about trust or it might be about forgiveness. And that's what you're really examining.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So like The Bear, the story is about all these people working at a restaurant that's kind of failing. What it's really about, the family and all their drama and healing and all that shit.
Well,
did you watch The Bear?
I watched the pilot, but each story, each episode has to be about one thing and has to be specific. You have to be very clear on what it's about. So you can't, it's not about, you know, so I guess in the pilot, it was about him trying to reconcile his brother's death. I have to think more about it, but it's about one thing. There's always one word. And I find that when we start writing, once you land on that word, If you write your script well, you'll notice you've mentioned that word way too many times during the draft. And then you sound like, okay, I just said that word about 10 times during the whole draft. Now I got to find other ways to say it so it doesn't become so obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that kind of process for me.
Yeah. What's the etiquette in a room when you're pitching ideas if you're a new writer?
Yeah. So that's a good question. So you want to pitch once. You hear your pitch your idea once, and if it gets no traction, move on. Pretend like you never.
You guys hear that?
Yeah. Don't dwell on it. People heard you, and they didn't like it, so move on.
Mm.
A good thing to do is wait till a higher up writer, they pitch something, and then latch on to it, build on it. You can't go wrong. You can never go wrong taking someone else's idea and adding to it,
mm-hmm.
because you're, and then that person will like you. Yeah, look, you're an ally.
So what's the language that we're using there?
Well,
oh, like what Michael said, what if he did this on top of
that? Oh, yeah, building on that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, I love that. And what if, as opposed to, it's a very common mistake new writers make is they shoot things down. And that's called, what we say is pitch, don't bitch.
Mm.
So come up with it. It's so easy to shoot down an idea. It's much harder to think of something constructive. So what's your pitch? So always come up, I'm a more experienced writer now, but a new writer should never point out a problem unless they have a solution. And you may think, well, is that right? Yeah, it's right. It is right because, you know, you don't want to be that person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not getting paid. You're not getting, as a writer, you're not getting paid. That's an executive's job. They're allowed to do that. And when you ask constant questions or you're shooting stuff down, now you're putting your boss on the spot, the showrunner. You're putting the showrunner on the spot. You're saying, no, boss, I don't like your idea. There's a problem with it. What else you got?
Mm-hmm.
Like, whoa, you're not the boss.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm sure some people come in too hot, too.
I see it happen a lot.
Yeah.
I see those people. What'd you do?
Amber Alert? I think that's our phones with an Amber Alert.
You're right.
Or an earthquake notification.
Well, neither one is child abduction. We're fine. It's fine. We're okay.
Where's my baby?
Wow, my phone was off. How did they do that? My phone was off.
I don't know. I actually turned my notifications off, which feels so fucked up to say.
But I turned the cell phone off and I have no Wi-Fi, so how do they do that?
I don't know. Really? That came through when your phone was off?
Yeah.
Did it turn your phone on now?
Which wasn't off, but I had my cell phone's off. I have no cell service and I have no Wi-Fi, so how did it fucking do that?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Anyway, sorry about that.
No, it's okay. So it was just an abducted child. It's not your fault. Yeah. They'll find their way home.
Yeah, when
they're homeward bound. So back to new writers, because I want to selfishly get some stuff for myself.
Yeah.
So you're hired on a show. You're sitting in the room.
And I was saying those writers often don't come back for the second season.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. So yeah, give me some more do's and don'ts.
Yeah, well, that's an important one. Don't make your boss your employee.
Mm-hmm. And is it best to sit back and see what the vibe of the room is and how everyone's interacting first and foremost before you start chiming in? Like, I don't want to feel like I'm piping up, you know?
My partner says this, and it's really good advice. You never want to be the last. When you come into a writer's room, everyone's always bullshitting for the first, 20 minutes or whatever, which is great. But you never want to be the last person to be not working. So read the room.
Ooh.
You never want to stop that, and the boss is going to show up at 10 o'clock. Your ass better be in the chair at 10 o'clock, not 10:01. Don't leave the boss waiting. This may seem obvious, but apparently it's not obvious to a lot of writers. Hey, we're being casual. I'll come in at 10:05. No, if the boss is in the chair, you better be in the chair too, whoever the boss is. And, those are kind of the big things. I always get a kick out of when new writers come in with a ton of ideas. And I'm like, oh, good, let's hear them. Because, I'm all ears. And if you have a good one, let's do it.
Yeah.
I like that attitude. They, they did the homework.
What about being like, okay, so I've had a crazy life.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was coming in, with an idea for something... Mm-hmm. Do I want to be like, that really happened to me when I'm talking about something crazy?
Yeah.
Like, is there respect for everyone's life experiences? Like, is there judgment along with certain things?
I don't think so. I think we encourage that from young writers.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, let's hear, tell me a true story so we can put a little spin on it. And yeah, absolutely. That's the most interesting stuff is true.
So there's no reason you think for anyone to be afraid of being judged by their coworkers in certain circumstances, within reason, obviously, nothing disturbing.
Yeah, nothing disturbing, but I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think that's the best place where writing happens, is people are just being truthful and honest and vulnerable. So, yeah.
Yeah. What about, do you think it's important then to let everyone sort of what's the hierarchical, is that a word?
Yeah, almost. I don't know. You might be right. Hierarchy.
What would you say?
I would
hierarchy.
Say, what's the,
so what's the hierarchy structure of
I wouldn't use a word. I don't know how to use it.
I know. Well, I started in confidently and then I backtracked.
Yeah, you
so what's the hierarchy of how it would work in a room? Like, is the showrunner then directing how everything is going to go? And then they're going to say, what do you got? And then you're going to let people with more experience speak first.
Why not?
You should hang.
Yeah, because, if there are 10 writers in the room and the staff writer is getting paid the least, which is still a good amount, and then the co-executive producer is getting paid quite a bit, much more. And so I think a lot of young writers think, well, if there are 10 people in the room, I better speak a tenth of the time. But you're not getting paid a tenth of the salary. You're not getting that. They're paying the co-exec they got to earn their money.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to speak more than you do because you're not getting paid nearly as much. So be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, the first few years of my career, I was like, I don't really know how I'm contributing here. I don't know what I'm doing.
Oh, that's interesting.
You don't want to, it's really bad to talk and to not know what you're saying, to not know what you're talking about. And because then everyone's waiting for you to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good. So wait until you have something useful to add, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense, obviously.
Yeah.
So what about pitching jokes?
Well, even pitching anything. So the job, I'll ask you a question. So a lot of people think that the job of a staff writer is to make the best show possible, right? Would you say that? Right. So you just got hired on the show, and we're pitching on an episode, and you think, no, I really think this is better. I think this scene should go this way, and this story should be about this, and you're adamant that you're right, mm-hmm. and you want to make the best show. But that's not your job. Your job is to make the best version of the show that the showrunner wants to make.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not agree at all, but it's the showrunner's show. They probably sold it. They're in charge.
Yeah, you're supporting someone else's vision.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. And so there are times where I'll pitch a story idea or a line and the showrunner doesn't like it, doesn't agree with it, and I don't fight for it. I say, okay, what don't you like about it? Let me figure out how I can get on your page.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
That's how you keep a job.
Yeah. Talk to me about the difference between when you're supporting someone else's vision and how you can best do that versus being, well, I guess if you're just free to do your own thing, that's that.
But a lot of new writers don't quite understand that. They really think that their job is to make the best. And so they'll argue, no, it would be better this way. And it's like, what are you doing?
It's crazy to argue.
I see it happen quite a bit.
And yeah. To say it'd be better this way?
Yeah, they're adamant that this is what, and you know, it's nuts because that's just not your job.
Yeah. What about the whole idea of, oh, I want to save this for me?
It's so funny. Sometimes I'll make a joke. I'll say, well, fine, if you don't like it, I'll put it on my one-man show. You know, ideas that didn't make the show. You know,
what was that, Michael? Nothing.
Yeah, nothing. You know, but there's nothing worth saving, I feel like. Like, you know,
mm-hmm.
if I'll pitch it and, so many people think they have these precious ideas. And it's like, dude, your job is to come up with more.
Right.
So if you feel like you only have three ideas, your future is not bright
mm-hmm.
because you need to have three ideas every day.
So give everything that you come
give
up
it all,
with.
Yeah,
I love that. Okay, so we talked about working on someone else's show. So with your own, if you and your partner are getting together and you want to write a pilot, where are you going to start?
It depends. Like, we have one right now we're doing, and this idea came from Tish Cyrus, who is Miley Cyrus's mom and Billy Ray Cyrus's ex-wife. So she had an idea for a show. And they needed writers, and they brought it. So it's their idea.
So is that something from your agent?
I can't remember if our agent or manager set that up, but yeah. So again, so that's we sold the show, the pilot, but it's there. So we're just like, how do we execute your vision again?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who from all the different shows that you've worked with have been some of the people that have taught you the most, and what interesting things have you picked up along the way?
I kept a book. Like a little crappy little notebook about all the things that I've learned from other writers, many of the writers you've never heard of, but every time someone says something interesting, I write it down.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly I learned a ton from Steve Levitan and a ton from Greg Daniels and Chris Lloyd and Joe Keenan, all these amazing writers I've learned so much from, just from being around them, and other writers you haven't heard of. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you can learn a ton.
Anything?
Oh, nothing.
That you can remember?
Oh, you know, there's so
I'm so
much.
Glad to hear that. What were some of those things?
Nothing. Just to keep my mouth shut. I remember Marsh McCall, who passed a couple of years ago, but he was a writer on Just Shoot Me. And I was struggling. This is my first job. And everyone on that show was so witty. And we'd be pitching on a line. And I felt like all I was doing was laughing. Because that was really one of the funniest writers' rooms I've ever been in. Excuse me. So everyone's pitching, and I'm like, and one day it occurred to me, like, I'm going to get fired because my job is not to laugh. My job is to make you guys laugh. And I said to Marsh, and he was, before that, he was a writer. He was the head writer on Conan. And so he was really good at, coming up with ideas. And I was like, everyone's pitching on a line, I can't seem to beat everyone. Even if I think of something funny, it's like 10 minutes later or whatever. And he said, it's such great advice, and I don't know if it's going to land with you or not, but he said, if everyone's coming with a line, figure out you're never going to beat them to that punchline. You're never going to, because they're fast. You have to figure out another way around that wall. You have to go under the wall. You have to, instead of climbing the wall, go around it. Think of a different way to get to a different joke.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, but I can't, I didn't even know I could do that. I really thought we were all like, I really thought it was so linear. We had to work on that one line. But once he said that, I was like, oh, I can think of anything. As long as it fills the requirement of what the line, it's like it just opened up the world of possibilities to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I don't have to come at this joke from one angle, and then everything just opened up. It really was one of those moments, like light bulb moments.
And are you talking about that specific line, though, or down the page? Like another, is that what you mean?
Oh, no, just if you're pitching on one line, if the joke is, if it's a Nina joke about how she came, how she had a, why she was late to work, and everyone's pitching, you know, I don't know, there was a, if people are saying, oh, there's a, the subway broke down, or there was, I was held up, I was mugged. You can come out all the way, you can come think of something completely different, how she was, how she thinks, how she thought she was early, you know? Mm-hmm. There's a joke about her showing up, oh, no, I'm not 10 minutes late. I'm 50 minutes early for my next, you know, there's a, always a different way around that problem. You have to think about it in terms of why she was late.
Mm-hmm.
Why is she early, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Not going for what everyone else is going for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then once that happened, I was like, wow. Then it became easy.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that.
Freeing your mind. It really is about being a good joke writer is really about having the confidence to free your mind and not to worry so much and just connect these two little thoughts together. It's so much more fun that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's hard to do because when you're in a room pitching, you know, the minute you say something, here comes the joke. There's ways to pitch a joke so you don't have to.
Yeah, talk to me about that.
Well, first of all, okay, this the worst thing you can do is say, I have a joke. And everyone's like, okay, what's your...
Because you're getting set up too much.
Yeah, it's already dead. You've already ruined it. So you have to say it as if, even if you wrote it down, don't write it, like, don't read it, for God's sake. Pretend like it just came to you and you already hate it. And and then if it bombs, you better have a backup joke in your pot. Like, like I remember, whatever comes to you is very funny. Like, I remember we were on a show, Glenn Martin, my partner and I were running the show. And it was great staff. And I was the boss. And I pitched a joke. It gets no laugh, right? Nothing. And I lean over to the guy next to me. I go, sorry, I tried my best. And he turned bright red.
That's
but
so
I got
funny.
A giant laugh out of that.
Yeah.
And so that's what people remember. Mm-hmm. They remember, oh, Michael said something funny. Not Michael didn't say something funny that's unusable.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So being on both sides, show running or being a staff writer, what have you noticed? First, you started off as a staff writer.
Yeah.
And what did you feel like was your perception of the showrunner that like once you got there,
mm-hmm.
you were wrong about?
Everyone, myself included, always thought, well, I could do this better than whoever's doing it, you know, because you disagree. Obviously, I would think, well, I think the show should be about this or that. And then when you become the showrunner, you realize, oh my God, it's way harder than I've ever imagined.
Mm.
It's a very stressful job. And you have to really understand story structure. And everyone's looking to you for the answers. And you have to keep the room light because you want people to have fun, be creative, and you don't want to be hold anybody hostage. And I always felt bad when we had to work late. I was like, I'm losing you guys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
It's yeah.
a very stressful job. And no one becomes a showrunner because they want to be a manager of people.
What can they do to make the showrunner's job easier?
Well, I mean, that's the entire job, is to pitch what the showrunner wants.
Mm-hmm.
That's everyone's job.
Right.
But turning a good draft, I mean, as long as a draft came in good, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, thank God. But often you get a draft that needs a page one rewrite. And like, I don't enjoy that. I don't enjoy rewriting everybody. I don't get paid extra for that. I want your draft to come in perfect.
When you're hiring writers, is there anything specifically that you look for?
Well, they really have to know how to, I look for those act break moments. Are the act breaks popping? How soon does the story start? Does the dialogue feel fresh? Those are the really most important things. And that may seem like generic, but most people can't do that.
Mm.
Yeah.
What do you think is the hardest thing?
Understanding story structure. And I didn't really understand it until it became really a showrunner. Mm-hmm. You know?
What do you think about it is so hard to understand?
It's not...
Like that something needs to happen by this page?
It's more like, let's say you had an idea and you pitched me an idea. And then I would say, okay, I know where that's the first act break. Well, you may say, well, no, isn't it? I think it's the second act break. Well, I have to know exactly where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's understanding story structure, is where that falls in the episode. That's really important.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine it's really like taking a lot of fluff off the beginning. Like, how much background do you really need?
The sooner you start the story, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Because people got it, they have a remote, they want to turn the channel.
Yeah. So how do you keep it? How can you keep something tight but not feeling like it's inauthentic? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's hard too, because there's a lot of shows that you feel like, especially sitcoms, where they're not well written. You're like, oh, come on, this seems so TV. It feels like it was written by someone who grew up on TV and didn't live life. Yeah, that's hard. But that's the difference between good writing and bad writing, I think.
Yeah. What about network notes that you don't agree with?
Yeah.
How are you going to respond to them and handle that?
Honestly, that's always very difficult. But they're paying you, and it's their job. They're going to give you, the minute you turn a script, they go, okay, let's set up a notes call. And you're like, but you haven't read it yet. Like, how do you know it's bad?
But yeah.
I have to say something. So they're going to say something.
I would imagine that's the most aggravating part.
It is, but that's how you get the money. And
yeah.
They're entitled to give, you know, they're paying for it, so they're entitled to be heard.
And do you disagree?
You can push back on certain things. I try to give them, sometimes you get a lateral note. You're like, will it make the show better? Or probably, maybe it doesn't, but you give it to them anyway because, you know, you want to give them as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You want to build an ally. You don't want to fight them on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, and these are people who aren't writers, so they don't necessarily know better. So sometimes they just want to be reassured. They want to know that you're in good hands. And that takes...
Oh, that's interesting.
That takes experience. You know, they won't know they're in good hands until you've turned in several episodes and they've seen it work.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you're... You know,
so it's kind of just building their trust with you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you just see what it feels like?
Yeah, but again, you have to earn that. So in the beginning, you know, it's really hard. And that's sometimes why, like, sometimes they make a show better, sometimes they make it worse. That's just how it goes.
Right. What do you think about people trying to, like an executive trying to tone you down, where you're like, this just isn't going to be good if you just tone it down because of you can't say this and that today?
Well, and that's network. On cable, you don't really get that note a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But on network, yeah, and you understand that's, you know, we've done so many shows, and the low budget ones, they tend to give you more freedom because, you know, if they're investing a lot of money, they're going to watch you like a hawk. But if it's low budget, they understand. And so you get more creative freedom in that, but you make less money.
What was one of your favorite shows you worked on and why?
Well, Marin was certainly one of them because we got, you know,
a lot of freedom,
so much freedom,
yeah,
but very little money. So,
but
we got to do pretty much anything we wanted to do.
Yeah. And how much of yourself do you put? Well, I guess you're writing his story.
Yeah. We're taking his stories from his life and trying to how do I turn that into an episode of television? Because sometimes you take something from his act, it was like, whatever, 5 or 10 minutes from that, or maybe 5 minutes from that. Well, how do you turn that to 22 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we come in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was great because Mark was always game. He was game for everything. You know, he was very courageous.
And so when you're developing something for someone, which it sounds like you've done
a lot,
how do you go about doing that? Are you asking them from stories from their life and then you're picking out what sounds the most exciting and interesting and pitching that to them?
Yeah, we did one for D.L. Hughley and he had a book. So we just read his book, and then he had his stories, like he's very brave as well. And so he had all these stories were outrageous. And then we figured out how to turn it into an episode of television. He goes, this is great. I'm like, well, it's from your life, man. You know, same thing with Joey Diaz. Same thing. We do.
Oh, shit.
We do a lot with what?
Oh, shit. He always says that.
Oh, yeah. We did a lot from, we work with a lot of comedians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Joey.
I remember when we were working with Joey one day, and he was like, how do I explain it to you? It's like when you're doing an 8-ball. Like, not Joey, I don't know what an 8-ball. I don't know what an 8-ball.
Really?
Yeah.
You haven't done an 8-ball?
I've never done an 8-ball, Joey.
Come on. Not to stay up and study at Princeton?
Yeah, no, we don't do any 8-balls there.
That's funny. Where do you see TV going with how everything is getting toned down?
Well, I don't know if that's true. I mean, on streaming, things don't get toned down. On network, maybe, but on the streaming, you know.
Really?
You think so?
Somewhat.
I don't know. I mean, not drama.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much good stuff on TV.
You mainly work in comedy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Comedy's a little different. But where's it going? I'm the worst person. I'm wrong about all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do you still go to the movies?
Physically, no. No, I'd watch them at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't.
Never?
I never, you know what? I don't, like, people like that group experience and seeing on the big screen. I like being on my couch, ready, and then taking a hit it, pause, and then, you know.
And what are the snacks you're having?
Oh, my God. The snacks I have is pure California. you know, my chia pudding made from oat milk. And it's like whole food.
Really?
Yeah, it's the worst.
That's what you watch a movie with?
Yeah, when you put like
chia pudding?
Yeah, with
no popcorn, pepper. No candy.
Oh, God, no.
You're having granola.
My house is the worst. It's like everything's natural. And
what do you do to decompress after a day of writing?
Oh, either read or watch TV.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what about when you're so brain dead? How do you get through those days when you're so brain dead when you're working?
It's impossible.
Yeah. Like in a room.
I've been on shows where you work till midnight or 2 a.m. and mm-hmm. it's really hard because you're not creative then.
Right.
And I don't know. Fortunately, the shows I've run, we've never had those hours. But like, that's really stressful for the showrunner because you know everyone else is zoned out and it's on your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard. That's network television. That's multi-camera network television. Those hours are like that.
Is that just coffee? Like, what do you do? You're just like...
You can see the room. You can see the people zoning out.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's coffee or just people like it.
No, like what do you... How do you push through that? You can't really, I guess, after a certain point.
Yeah. I mean, there's just, it's muscle power. It's just muscle. You see the showrunners muscling it. Like, mm-hmm. Just shoot me the first year. I think we worked till 4 a.m. It's like, you know, because the script got tossed out and we had to write a new one.
Mm-hmm. That's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you keep like a good attitude with that?
Well, you're making money. At the time.
That's true.
At the time I was young. This is exciting.
Yeah.
You know, we're making TV. And now I was like, I don't know. This doesn't seem like a good idea, guys.
Right.
Shouldn't I be asleep by now?
Yeah. So when you're trying to sell your own project mm-hmm. and you're in the process of trying to get attachments and it goes on for a long time,
yeah.
How do you not go crazy over that?
Yeah, I mean, that's really hard. That's why you're always working on multiple projects.
Mm-hmm.
And I always see, like, even when you're working on an idea, you're like, the odds of selling it are always low. Even for someone like me, the odds are low. So you don't get too attached with it. You concentrate on the work and hopefully you sell it. And if it doesn't sell, okay. The goal is to walk into a pitch meeting, do a good job, impress them, and have them say, great, what else you have? Come back. This isn't right, but we want to hear your next idea. That's
mm-hmm.
a victory,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then if they buy, oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. How can you make the most out of those generals if...
Not even a general. It's like a pitch meeting.
No, sorry. I was asking a separate question. Sorry. I was thinking if you're sending your script out and they like it, they want to meet you, you know, we'll take a look at the next thing. But what's like something memorable you can do in that meeting that's going to make it not just like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll send you the thing. And it's like nothing happens from there.
Those general meetings are really hard. And often those executives hop around. So they're going to be at a different job in 2 years anyway. And so if you can leave an impression upon them, hopefully it's about a long-term relationship and it's not really about today's job, it's about the next one.
That's smart.
Yeah.
And then I guess we'll just wrap up with pitching.
Yeah.
Do you love it?
I mean, you do your sweaty song and dance.
Uh-huh.
No, I don't know if anybody loves it, you know.
Do you feel like you tried so hard in the beginning and now you're just like, here it is? Like,
no, I mean, you go in with a good attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything you write, you fall in love with. But if you want to make a living at it, you know, some people say, well, if you don't sell it, can you sell it somewhere else? Or they say, like, if you sell your show and they don't make it, can you sell it somewhere else? I'm like, I would have to buy it back.
Mm.
I'm not giving the money back. I already spent that money. I'll come up with another idea.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like, I don't think I'm jaded. It's just more like, this is the business. This is how you approach it as a profession.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is best to focus on in those pitch meetings?
To focus on? Well, I mean, you're kind of establishing the world. You're giving them a taste of some story ideas.
I know what like a pitch deck looks like.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay. So do you feel like those aren't even needed?
I don't know. I mean, I don't go in with artwork unless it's an animated show.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have an animator attached. But for the most part, you're just going in, here's my idea. And maybe you show some slides of what a character might look like.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not selling high concept, you know. I guess if I were to try to pitch The Handmaid's Tale, we're doing these dark tones and maybe you want a pitch deck for that because it's kind of, you have to imagine it. But for what I take out, it's, you know, it's family. It's a family comedy. It's an office comedy. It's not, you know.
Yeah, like it's more simple than that.
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then what's advice that you would give? Just general advice, whatever comes to mind.
I give advice every day on social media.
And where can we find you?
You can find me at Michael Jamin Writer on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. I give advice every day.
And then what about your one-man show?
Come see me. That's called The Paper Orchestra. And if you were touring with it and you go to michaeljamin.com/live, and then you enter your city that you're in, and then I'll send you an email when I get to your city.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Michael, for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yay. Bye.